I didn't actually have like the money for the equipment.
Yeah.
And I didn't even know. So I was like, I would come here during the daytime and like no one was in the club, obviously at 3 p.m. So I would just come in, plug in and like be working on mixes. And I'd have like friends come by and be like, this is how you do this or this is how you do that.
Hello, all, and welcome to Marsha, 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 the podcast. I'm your host, Marsha Molinari. And you are here listening to the podcast that brings true and heartfelt human connection. I believe if you don't know about it, you can't care about it. And that's why we're here today. Hey, everyone, and welcome back to Marsha, Marsha, Marsha. I am with H-Wood family, bon vivant, golden boy extraordinaire, Zach Bia.
Thanks for having me, Marsha.
So how's it going?
Should we tell them what happened right before we walked in?
I don't think we should mention that.
Okay.
No, we're not involved. So right before
Zach... No, but it wasn't even... We don't even know what happened, but we just... I'm walking up to...
To come meet you
to do this, six cop cars pull over on Sunset and they jump out with their assault rifles and they're like cocking their gun. They're like about to barge in.
So I'm
like,
the
only person that's in there is like Marsha and the crew.
What could she be doing?
I'm like, what could she be up to? But luckily, I guess it was a false alarm.
No, they had me also come out and they're like, hands up. And I'm like, my God, what am I supposed to do?
Some friends drove past on Sunset and were texting me like, is everything okay? I'm like, yeah.
I would have said no.
I don't know.
No, not at all. Well, apparently there was a call that came through, and but they found out that no one else is in here besides us, so everything is cleared. Maybe it was an old message.
I don't know.
Maybe it's a ghost.
You know, people get prank calls and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Who knows?
It could have been that. Maybe someone's just hating on the show, but I don't see how that's possible.
No, I think everyone loves
it. No, yeah, I didn't. Not that way. Well, let's talk about, because we know each other, but let's start with baby Zach. Where was baby Zach born?
I was born in New York City.
New York City?
Born in New York City. I grew up in like Brooklyn Heights till I was like 8, 9, moved to Manhattan, Upper East Side, like more like Spanish Harlem.
Okay.
And then moved to LA when I was like 13. Been there since.
And you have a brother, right?
Younger brother, Elon.
Yeah.
My mom.
And that was it?
Yeah.
And you guys just packed up and moved west?
Yeah, I think it's funny. I've been talking with a lot of friends about how, especially even like some younger friends, how they made the conscious decision to move from home to LA or LA to New York or wherever it is.
Yeah.
And like, I've been very fortunate in my life that I've got to live in all these amazing places and it wasn't even like my decision.
Right.
Right. Like kind of get exposed to it just like through my mom making the decision to move.
Well, I think that's, you know, well, that just goes to say we're like a product of our upbringing in a way, because, mm-hmm. you know, you could have turned away from anything, big city life, you know, and just been like, I want to live in the middle of nowhere.
Totally. No, I'm definitely a city person.
Yeah. And so do you also know like a ton of people from New York just by...
Definitely. I definitely experienced like a whole new version of New York when I like got a little older, but I'm a New Yorker at heart, and I think like that foundation was really important for me to be able to navigate LA the way I did.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's just a very different thing to me. LA felt like one big suburb, and then New York is more of like a real fast-paced like metropolitan city. And I spent a lot of time in Paris too, so like having that kind of foundation and then moving out here, I felt like always give me sort of like maybe a little bit of an advantage.
What's the connection with Paris? Because I was shocked when I got in the car with you and we're traveling to Fashion Week to host a party. And Paris is my thing,
mm-hmm.
I thought.
It's our thing.
It's our thing. No. But like for like, you know, the nightclub life, I thought I really had it locked down. I really did. I was just like loving that about myself.
Mm.
And I get in the car and I hear you speak English to the driver. And I'm like, well, let me handle the little French I know. And then you just went off. And I was like, who are you?
No, some people don't know I speak French. My mom and dad are both born and raised in Paris. I spent a lot of time probably.
I love your mom, by the way.
She's the best.
She's the best.
I appreciate you saying that. Yeah, I spent a lot of time probably every summer and winter in France growing up. And then
so in New York too, when you're in New York, you're going back and forth.
It's easier. It's like New York to Paris is like flying New York to LA.
Yeah, it's great actually.
So I spent like I would say like literally like a third of my like childhood was spent in France.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah.
So what's the idea? Because, you know, when I was 13, everything was so dramatic. And if my mom wanted me to move away, I would run away. You know what I mean? Like you have your friends and your group, and like 13 is such a wild age, I think.
It's such a formative age.
Yeah, definitely a formative age. You're still growing and learning so much.
I think...
were you just like, let's go?
Funny enough, we were actually in France at the time. My grandpa had just passed, and we were like in France handling a bunch of family stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And my mom got a job opportunity. She was kind of flying back to LA sort of pretty often. And obviously she was just, you know, single mom raising my brother and I. So she was kind of leaving us to go handle work. Not like she wasn't there, but I'm saying she had to like leave on
some, alone at five.
She had to leave on some weekends and whatever. And I think some like job opportunities came up for her. And I think she was getting a little tired of New York. Right. I think when you spent so many years there, I think she was just feeling a little drained.
Well, yeah.
And she wanted like a change of pace and she had a cool opportunity that arise. And we were just in France handling stuff. And she's like, look, when we go back to New York, like everything's getting packed up. We're moving to LA. And honestly, I'd been to LA like once before with my mom, and I was sort of excited about it.
And we're moving to like the beach, and there's going to be surfing, and there's just like Hollywood life.
I remember the first time ever coming to LA with my mom. Came for like 2-3 days, and I remember like the drive up from the airport up La Cienega to West Hollywood, and like Beverly Center on your left, the views of the hills, palm trees, whatever. I'm like, what is this place?
This is the,
you know,
life.
And I just, it was so different.
Yeah.
And you know, when it's things that seem so normal to us now, it's often, you know, like when you have a friend visit from out of town that's never been to LA.
Yeah.
And you kind of like fall back in love with it.
Totally.
You're like, wow, look through at their all eyes. These things, right?
Yeah.
Through their eyes. And like, I remember those first things for me were really special. And also feel like as a kid, I didn't really have like a lot of friends in New York.
That would be surprising to know now.
Yeah, yeah. So
you're surrounded by people all the time.
Yeah. I was kind of like, I don't know. I was like, I was just running around.
Yeah, just kind of Brooklyn.
Yeah, I was doing my thing. I was like skating and like working on music. And
were you
things.
Like, okay, so you're in Brooklyn, but were you like a troublemaker? Did you
no,
like?
No, not at all. I was actually always a really good student.
Yeah.
My whole life.
I mean, I was too. My friends were bad. Like I think about it, I'm like, kids are bad. You know, like. My friends would just like do prank calling, like leaving bags of shit on the door and knocking on the neighbor's door, like with it burning. Like they did, maybe just had.
I know every kid gets into some stuff, and like
totally,
especially like, you know, I was surprised about how independent you could be at a young age in LA.
Yeah,
like in New York, you're not like walking home from school at 12 years old, but in LA, like I feel like kids are like skating and biking to school, and it was like kind of like a new thing for me when I moved here.
Oh yeah, we walked everywhere. We had to walk everywhere.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And I think like that's like what I mean by like kind of a suburban aspect of the big city. And you know, I think part of me, keep in mind, like I grew up with French parents. I went to a French school in New York.
Right.
Went to a French private school. I went to public school when I was like really young in Brooklyn. And then like by the time I was like first grade, second grade, I went to a French private school. So when I moved to LA, I go from being kind of like in this very European environment to like, here's my new life in LA.
Way different.
LA public school, which is great. And just a whole kind of different thing. And it's like, imagine almost feeling like a foreigner.
Totally. In your own Again, country, though, right? Like, right? Because you have to like go back and forth.
And I don't know. Just... education kind of became like less and less important. Funny enough, like I made it to college. I went to college. I dropped out.
Yeah.
And I feel like the
but what was like, I know. So like we had things like career centers, and I wanted to be like a marine biologist at one point. And then I was like, I'm going to join the military to travel and see the world. Were there any things that you thought like I'm definitely going to be this, or, you know,
I had a couple dreams, right?
Yeah.
So when I was like very young, when I was like 6, I heard about like, what was happening with pollution and everything. And I had this like idea that like I was going to be the guy to solve like the problem with the ozone layer.
We needed you.
Yeah.
We still need you.
I gave up on that one. I just didn't go that route educationally. I was always like playing in bands and stuff when I was a kid. So I was always like, I'm going to be a music producer. I'm going to DJ. I was always like making playlists for everyone. So that one luckily came true.
Yeah. It really did.
And, I had a couple different things, you know, I don't know. I would watch movies and I was like, do I want to be a stockbroker? Do I want to be a, you know, I don't know. And I think it's funny because like, kind of like the, idea of going to school and having like business success was kind of like almost like my search for like my American identity coming from a very French European family.
It
was
and
like,
that's what you were doing when you went to USC.
It was like my family. No one in my family went to college in the US.
Yeah.
So it was like, here's my chance to like form my own path, only to like revert back to the things I liked when I was a kid anyways.
Totally. Mm-hmm. Well, I was thinking about that too, because I had never, you know, thought about one. I don't know if that's what you think about when you're 12 years old, is like, I want to own a club one day. Mm-hmm. You know, I want to be part of like this big, huge group. And like, we have like a bunch of restaurants and it's like planning everyone's next good time. Mm-hmm. But when I thought about the little things that led down the road or the things that I learned that led me here, I was like, that all makes sense to me.
Don't you feel like, I feel this way, and I'm curious if you do, like, don't you feel kind of like, to echo what you're saying and maybe like build upon it, don't you feel like certain things that you did in middle school and high school, whatever, like led you to have the skill set to do the things
you ended up doing, totally. Right?
Like, were you throwing parties in high school? Were you, I don't know.
Were you I would definitely organizing things.
Definitely.
And getting like different groups of people. Like I was friends with everyone in school, mm-hmm. like from the jocks
so
to
was
like,
I.
you know,
yep. across the board.
Across the board. And I was welcome to sit, you know, wherever I wanted with the goth kids and go and sit in like senior court and all the things. So I think that's something that kind of like, it takes a definitely unique person to be in the world that we're in. Mm-hmm. And one, not be destroyed by it. Mm-hmm. I think the joy that we get out of it is bringing people together, just like, you know, when I was in elementary school and I wanted to plan get-togethers with my friends. And sure, there was like cake and whatever. But later on, coming to LA, one of my first jobs was opening this club at Hollywood and Highland Center. And it was just a job and I didn't think anything of it. But it was like 18 and under. So I was just 20 at the time. And then after that, I never really went out that much. Mm-hmm. So when we came back and we had H-Wood at the Hollywood and Highland Center, I was like, this is wild.
How funny, full like, circle.
Yeah, here we are again.
Totally.
Yeah, so you leave USC. Did you join H-Wood before you
Definitely. Left? I started working for H-Wood when I was 18.
Yeah, you were here. You've been here for a while.
Yeah, I think for me, it goes back to what you were saying about like it takes a special type of person to one, be in it and two, like not get consumed by it.
Yeah.
The biggest blessing that I had was like actually, which would you would think would be the opposite, but being around all of it so young, that's when I was like, okay, to me, this is a job.
Yeah.
And I can't fuck up.
Yeah.
And I'm the young one here and I don't want to be at. I was like not even of legal age to drink.
Yeah.
So I was like, I don't want to be working and illegally drinking or doing whatever, you know, just for lack of a better example. So I was like, to me, where everyone would come party, to me, like I always saw it as like a job, especially in the early stages. And to me, it was just kind of like coincidental. I was starting school at USC. I didn't have any money to pay for school or like anything else. I was very lucky. I got like a ton of financial aid from USC. So I was able to go there and then like working at the club was like, okay, I can go to school during the day and like have this cool job at night where I can like make a couple hundred bucks a week. And it was like, to me, it was like a perfect scenario.
So tell me about your meeting with John Terzian.
The first time I ever went to an H-Wood club was Hooray Henry's.
Yeah.
And I remember we showed up like in suits. Like we didn't know what was going on.
Yeah.
We thought like we're supposed to dress up like adults.
Yeah.
And we see it online. It opens at 10. So we like showed up in suits at 10 o'clock.
Yes.
And I remember like Brick, obviously you remember Brick. Brick was like, it's Little Terzian. It's Little Terzian.
Brick's the man.
First time I've ever been in the club ever. So then they're like, I'm like, who is this guy? Who do they keep calling me?
Little Terzian? John Terzian is not your father.
No.
It's just a rumor.
No, but they're like Little Terzian. I'm like, who is it? They're like, it's the owner. And then later that night, Brian Toll walks in and they're like, I'm like, who is that guy? They're like, that's the owner. I'm like, I look nothing like that guy.
Oh, you thought?
I didn't know that there was two separate guys.
Oh my God.
So then whatever. And then, you know, one thing led to the next. I kept showing up at the same club and started letting me in. They thought I had a cool kind of little crew and stuff. I got offered a job. There's like that Fetty Wap story that I always tell that I think I've like kind of like blown that story up too much.
Tell me.
The story goes, I show up to the club that night I'm telling you about. It was my 19th birthday or 18th birthday. And Fetty Wap is also a Gemini. His birthday is like 2 days before.
Yeah.
So I guess it was like technically his birthday celebration at the club. And I've never like been like in close proximity of like a club and rappers and whatever at the time.
Yeah.
And I've been around music and stuff like that, but like this is like my first time like being out and about. And basically like Fetty Wap walks by us, and this is like the peak of his career. And when he like had all these big hits going on, and I'm just like, it's my birthday. And my friends are like, it's his birthday, blah, 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 blah. And he's like,
and you're in a tux.
I'm in like a suit. Yeah, suit, for sure. Yeah. And he's like, oh really? Like, it's my birthday. What's your name? Et cetera, et cetera. We kind of exchange information, and throughout the night, he's like shouting me on the mic and like inviting me over to his table, whatever.
Best night ever.
And then like someone grabs my number and is like, oh, this must be Fetty Wap's friend. Let me get his number, and he'll get Fetty Wap out to the club. Like thinking like I'm like his assistant or something. And that's kind of like how I got into the club the first couple times. And now everyone, like now, like I always see online, like TikToks and stuff, people being like, Fetty Wap changed Zach's life. And like, whatever, like.
It was one night. It was one
like,
story.
I love him and he's awesome. And like, totally. It's a really funny story.
Yeah.
But like, you know,
it's really funny.
I wouldn't call it like the life changing
moment,
but definitely like legendary after, story.
Right.
It's years.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not one thing. There's not one single moment.
No, it's every day you make different steps, you know, towards different things.
Totally.
And so now you're well in the club. I remember you around, and I remember thinking to myself, wow, this is such a perfect pair. Not because you guys looked alike. I just felt the energy, the same kind of like glowing energy that I feel from John.
I love him. Best ever.
Yes. And why we love him is the same reason why I love you. And I think everyone else loves you. You can just feel it right off the bat.
I'm lucky to be in that conversation.
No, it is. It's really great. And I mean, when I saw it, I was like, this is perfect. And I never questioned anything about it. You know, the group that he's created, that's curated by him. He sees people and then he really goes 1,000% for them.
John is like someone who squeezes like more hours out of the day than anyone I've ever met.
Never seen it before. In my life.
Seriously, like I really don't know how he does it. And we know a lot of like really hardworking people, but I've never seen anything quite like it. And he's also someone that never like demands any credit.
Yeah.
He's a happy connector, happy embracer of people, and kind of like, you know, sometimes I have to remind him, like, look at all these amazing things that like we're doing based on your vision, or look at this place, you know, whatever. But I think that when we zoom out a little bit out of it, you know, especially for me to get embraced by a group of John and you and Brian and Adam and all these people at an early age, like, you can't make that shit up. You know, like those groups are like, it doesn't happen very often that there's like,
it's
amazingly
so
talented
rare.
People
yes.
that are all aligned in vision. No one's selfish. Everyone has their own piece of what they're doing. And it was very special and it was very pivotal for me. I mean, my relationship with John, I went from interning to him, to working for him, to him being my manager, to him and I partnering on businesses. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, like, all across
like
the board.
I've been on every step of the way with John, and he's someone that's guided me and been a big brother to me. And then in other ways, I feel like I'm a big brother to him.
No, I mean, I think we all learn from each other, but for sure. You know, he does this, and I've told him that, like, how special it is, like, his eye for people and things like that. So let's bring it back. You're in the club. I remember you around for a while, and you were always showing up in a tuxedo and in the office during the day, because not a lot of people at the time were coming to the office during the day. And you, I really saw
that third floor office.
Yeah. And I really saw like a hunger in you that, you know, you wanted to be here. You wanted to be a part of this. You know, I've had a couple of times where people are like, well, can't you just like make me like a Zach Bia? No, you can't be a Zach Bia because I already know you enough. I go, Zach put in the work. Zach was there every day. And, you know, you show up.
I went out 7 nights a week.
And still came to the office.
And I went out 7 nights a week for like 5 years.
Yeah.
I think probably over the, let's say whatever 365 times 5 is, I probably missed like 15 days.
Yeah.
Total.
And I think people don't really understand like the difficulty of that. You know.
And it was different things, you know, like we have restaurants and we have this, and I was hosting parties and I was DJing parties and I was putting together parties and I was booking talent. And like my thing was always kind of like, you know, same thing. We're all people. People's people.
Yeah.
And
we're the people's people.
And you know, we talk about like in the music business, we talk about how people will see an artist once they like break through, And once they have a hit song, and they'll be like, look at this overnight success.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's a 3-year overnight success. It's a 5-year overnight success. Yeah. You know, you're seeing like that tip of the iceberg and you're not seeing everything that's below it. So I think, you know, if there's anything to be said about your work or my work is like, this is years of compounded, you know, hours put in.
Yeah.
Hours of DJing, hours of handshaking, hours of conversation, hours of relationships. So like, yeah, definitely.
I mean, it's only been frustrating one time for me, for myself personally, when I had to write something on Instagram because I kind of got fed. Before, I didn't care what people thought of me. And I really don't now. Like, you can assume what you want and like think I do whatever you think I do. But one of these, like, I think it was Us Weekly or In Touch or something, wrote about me being a drug dealer to all these celebrity people. And my reaction immediately, and they had to write a rebuttal, and because, you know, we sued and they lost, and because it wasn't true. But my thought to that, that kind of got me angry, was like, oh, well, you just placed a whole other life.
Whole narrative.
A whole narrative that you made up just because you didn't know.
And you know, what's tough about that is I think, especially when you do, you know, someone like you who creates experiences, right?
Yeah.
Whether it be on the restaurant side, anything from a dinner to a party to a corporate collaboration, whatever, all the different things you're touching across the board. It's not the type of work where you're going to scream out to the world like, hey, I did this.
Yeah, I've been working here for 10 hours. It's about the
actual experience or whatever the thing that you're planning is. And, you know, that speaks for itself. And that's why the people show up. And that's why the people that are.
And I think, you know, at the time when I did let it bother me, I was in a place where, like, one, I shouldn't have cared. But then after that, I said, I'm not going to care anymore and let the work speak for itself and see.
And then the problem is, like, you are someone who lets the work speak for itself. And then when people from an outside perspective see you or me in, like, quote unquote, high profile situations, they're trying to justify, why is this person there and not me?
Yeah.
Or how did this person get there?
Meanwhile, they don't know that we did all the other work.
Of course. And once you're in that situation, you know, the word that you're keeping private of like what your business is or whatever it is going to travel much less. Because that's something that's contained. Especially when we're dealing with high profile relationships. The whole thing has always been to like protect that. It's sacred. You know, especially if you're throwing a party for a music artist or whatever it is, we're dealing with unreleased music. We're dealing with high profile people. This is like a situation that you want to protect, which is why we're extra secretive about it. And then the people that are creating the rumors, those are the ones that are sharing it to tabloids. Those are the ones that are sharing it to social media. So then that word becomes telephone game. And next thing you know, weeks and months and years have gone by of like rumors that you can't even like contain anymore.
Yeah.
And it's traveling or whatever. It's fine.
I mean, you know, then the plus side for us, what I know is that I was thinking about this in the car and I was like, we're kind of like the Forrest Gumps of our time, where we are in that around.
Where they're like everywhere. He's like.
Yeah, like we're in or around, are part of these iconic cultural moments. Mm-hmm. You know, I was talking to a friend the other day and like, do you remember like we had at Coachella, I had in my Coachella house, it was Kylie, Kendall, Haley, Jordan Woods, Selena Gomez, all sleeping over at my place, you know, when they were very young, like, you know, but they were all like very close friends. And my friend was like, don't you think that's crazy? Because now these girls are like literally the faces of everything. And it's like, you know, I remember being around Bella when she's like, I think I want a model.
Yeah, for sure.
And then she's the model.
Yeah, like, no, and I think what's also special about being able to believe in people early is like seeing the whole thing unfold.
Definitely.
And being a part of it.
Yeah.
And investing in people. You know, it's like just even as friends, I think so many of our friends, we've come such a long way. And sometimes you don't even realize it because you've been on the journey the whole time.
Right.
So it's not like point A and then point B was right here. It was like, you know, gradual climb to point B. But it's like, oh my God, you know how many artists like we threw their release parties or we like
birthdays,
I played their song for the first time in the club or whatever. And it's like, you look back on this kind of, it's awesome.
It's total.
It's a privilege.
I remember, you know, speaking of playing first songs, I played I Kissed a Girl at Hyde. And I gave it to Devin Lucian. So like, how wild is that we work so close with Devin, but like, I think in my life, like in our lives, and once we find people, we keep them and cultivate those relationships and cater to them.
Well, they're genuine, right?
That's what it is. Yeah. Cause we've known them.
There's been so many, there's people we believed in before anything happened. We would have believed in them regardless of where the career went. It's just human things. You know, I have the same best friends, 12, 15 years that have always been with me.
Yeah. Same.
It's just about investing your time in good people. And then all the extra stuff is just like beautiful reward.
Definitely. Speaking of good people, I want to bring up your relationship with Virgil and how that came about, because I know that it was a special one. And we all get to meet very special people all the time. And we have a list of people that we hold dearly. How did that relationship start, and like, how did it become get so close?
We had a bunch of mutual friends. Virgil was also someone who, you know, squeezed a week out of a day.
Yeah.
And always zigzagging across the world and working on 50 things at once. I mean, 500 things at once.
But I feel like you say that, and you said that about John, but I also feel that's the same characteristic you have and what people are drawn to. And
I'm trying. You know, I think I'm lucky to be around people like all the people we're mentioning. Yeah. Virgil is, you know, definitely like my idol turned big brother turned, you know, I'm just very lucky to have spent any time with him at all. And, we had, a ton of mutual friends. And then when I was like 18, 19, it almost started as like, you know, I've been following him on Instagram for years. I was always like a kid that was always like tapping into everything. I've been following him on Instagram for years. And then we just like started, he followed me back when I was like 18, 19, and he was always keeping up with what I was doing. Yes. And he keeps tabs on like.
His finger on the pulse.
Oh my God.
Like early on.
To Virgil, like something that's like, he cares as much about the local kids skating down whatever street it is than he does about whatever the biggest company is there. And he puts them on the equal playing field, and he knows as much about both of them.
Right.
So like he would be keeping tabs on kind of like the parties we were throwing in LA or whatever. Oh, what's going on? Oh, this is cool. Who DJed this or what songs got played or whatever. And always kind of keeping tabs. And then as I started to really be around like what you can call like the quote unquote cultural calendar, Art Basel, Fashion Week, whatever, we'd always run into each other. And because people like Pedro, who's like one of my favorite DJs and someone who's like a brother, definitely like a big brother, you know, to me. Was like someone that was working on sound design for Virgil. And then someone like all these kind of people, we were all in the same kind of clique. And so of all the people that we knew, we were like the 10, 15 people that were always around each other and always like keeping up with each other. So then over the course of the, you know, 5-6 years, it turned from running into each other to making plans with each other to hanging out with all, you know, I got to spend a lot of time with him. And
collaborating, I'm sure,
on different things. Ideas and all kinds of stuff.
That's really cool. Yeah. Anyway, well, I think that what we do is we connect. We connect everything from even planning the party, from our friends who are, you know, running the sponsors. And with that, like, I had a friend tell me, like, she's a, you know, it's Katy Perry, and she's like, we need people like you, like, you know, because in the same one room that you're curating might be the finance guy. Well, the celebrity needs the finance guy to, you know, produce their movie. Mm-hmm. And or this person needs their script to this person. And I think that we kind of do a great job. And like you said, finding those people that we believe in and putting them together.
I think what made the parties I was throwing special and what makes parties in general throughout the history of time special is it's the only forum in which all these different people can exist in one room,
right?
You know,
and it's always welcoming. I'll tell you that. Like, I've
some
never
people aren't
felt...
welcome to the boardroom, and yeah. Some of these boardroom guys aren't welcome at the skate park,
right? Exactly,
those guys or whatever. And this creates this space where all these people can coexist,
yeah.
And especially when
we're like the opposite of you can't sit with us, we're like you can sit with us.
I think we experience the true golden age of LA.
Yeah. We're in it.
I think that when I look back and look at all these, you know, Studio 54 documentaries, all these things, and I hate to sound like crazy, but I look at those things and I'm like,
we're living it.
we're doing almost crazier things.
No, yeah, definitely.
That. And it was different era.
Different time.
And, you know, there's no social media.
I have the chills there. Because it is when you look back at those photos, you're like, kind of like.
And they're so iconic and nostalgic.
Yeah.
And I think once we look back on
this,
parties we've been to and parties we've thrown and parties I've DJed or whatever it is, you look back with a new lens of whatever is happening in 30 years, whatever new social media, whatever it is, we'll look back and be like, that era was like, I mean,
part of cultural history.
No doubt.
In many forms.
Things that permeated from that relationships that started in the club, pictures that exist forever, parties that, like, you know, that'll never be recreated, things like that. And those are really, really special times. A lot of things stemmed out of that. A lot of music was made from people that met at these places. A lot of business relationships were cultivated. A lot of lifelong friendships were made. A lot of literally iconic pictures that I see on the internet every day. I'm like, that was at our party.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We brought that together.
Totally.
It's such a special thing. So let's talk about, speaking of like bringing things together and starting new things and new ventures, you have a record label.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about it.
I mean, you know, I'm retired from parties. Only when they're like my friends' parties I go, or like I only really go to parties that I'm like DJing. The rest of the time I'm in the studio.
No, yeah, I know that about you.
And I don't even.
Thank you for taking the time out today.
Oh my God! Are you kidding? Anything for you? But I yeah. The backstory, by the way, for people who don't know, like Marsha's known me since I was 18 years old.
Yeah.
Interning, throwing parties, I started DJing parties, and it all spot, you know, we've traveled kind of everywhere and done a lot of crazy stuff. So it's just, it's really nice to be talking to you about it all now. But, you know, yeah, I started a record label, put out our first song, Top of 2020. We have about 7 artists now. This last year, we signed the biggest breakout hip hop act of the year. His name is Yeat, Y-E-A-T. And, you know, it's very special when you get to find... Same thing, we're going back to, like, finding friends that end up doing all these amazing things.
Right.
It's the same thing you apply to music. And that's what I was always doing while I was throwing parties, was, like, who's the cool new artist that I care about that I should book?
Right.
And a lot of those things, like, ended up really panning out.
Right.
And that's when, you know, record labels and managers and people were coming to me like, should we partner on this? Should you start your own this? And I had a couple of friends that were working in music, and I had some mentors that were very established in music, and they were just like, hey, why don't you start your own thing? So I partnered my friend James. He quit his job. We started the label, signed a couple of amazing artists, and across kind of the spectrum, hip hop, pop stuff, kind of alternative stuff. And this year we've had, you know, 2 top 10 albums on Billboard.
Wow.
We've had an artist that has over 1.5 billion streams this year. Sold like a million records this year. A little over 1 million records this year.
Okay.
So, you know, it's all moving.
Heading to the top.
Trying. Slowly but surely.
No, I think, and I mean, you're doing it. And I think the best part is that you do it it's like a passion of love.
No doubt. And even with the music stuff, like, I don't even want to talk about it too much, because to me, it's entirely about the artists.
Yeah.
You know, it's not about their connection to me. It's not about what I've done for them or whatever, because every artist we have a different relationship with. Some of them I'm very hands-on with the music. Some of them I'm more hands-on with the marketing. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, and it's, especially when you're dealing with artists.
It depends where you see the fit.
And this is their, the music and all the stuff is like, it's all his brainchild. You know, he knows what the music looks like and sounds like and the language, and he's built the whole world around it. My job is just to help him do all the other things, you know, deliver it and fund it and market it and do all these different things. So, it goes back to that same thing where, like, kind of taking the back seat in terms of the front page,
right,
and just really being there to help operate. And then it's funny because in my life, I kind of have, like, I'm straddling the lines of both that on my executive side and on the personal side. Like, obviously I DJ, and obviously I'm like,
you DJ front, big, huge things.
Front center of, you know, I play festivals and Vegas stuff, and I'm lucky because I kind of get to pick and choose the things I want to DJ, and I've gotten to that point now in my career. But, you know, I started DJing like little small sets at Blind Dragon and college parties to now. So it wasn't like, it was that same thing, that gradual.
I mean, and you really, I mean, I would come here during the day and you would be DJing.
Yeah, practicing during the daytime.
Yeah, practicing during, I'm like, whoa, he's very, very serious about this. And I mean, that's how I know, like, you know, when people are like, I want to do that. I'm like, you can't just do that.
Yeah, I didn't, you know? I didn't actually have like the money for the equipment.
Yeah.
And I didn't even know. So I was like, I would come here during the daytime and like no one was in the club, obviously at 3 p.m. So I would just come in, plug in and like be working on mixes, and I'd have like friends come by and be like, this is how you do this or this is how you do that. And I was so lucky that a lot of people were able to kind of invest the time into me and give me the little tidbits. And then I was able to run off with it and make my own thing out of it.
You surely have made your own thing out of it, honestly. And I think it's a great thing. And I'm so happy to witness your story and be a part of it. And honestly, I can't wait for your movie.
Oh my God, never.
Come on. It's going to be great.
Never, but I do have, this is probably the first time I'm ever talking about it. I do have music coming out.
Oh, I can't wait.
Obviously not me like singing or anything, but kind of going back to what I've been always done on the music side, which is like putting records together.
Yeah.
I have a very clear sort of vision for collaborative songs of artists that I love and I'm friends with, and kind of like imagine taking an artist out of their traditional sound and putting them in a new direction. And because it's not their song and it's my song, I can contextualize it. Like here, let me take this rapper and put him on a dancier song because it's my record. And this is the vision. Or like, take two artists that you probably would never think would collaborate, and me being that common kind of glue and fabric can like create that moment.
Right.
So, you know, I mean, pulling from a lot of different
inspirations. Just the thread in this, like.
Yeah. And I've been working, I have a studio across the street from here.
Yeah.
So, producing music, I bring in a ton of like different people that I think are amazingly talented in like electronic music and hip hop and whatever, and kind of like creating the frame. It's almost like think of a designer, right?
Yeah.
And you're the head of a design house and you have like your design team.
And you create
the framework of like, this is what the collection looks like. These are the colors. These are the fonts. Definitely. These are the whatever. That's the exact same thing we're doing in music. These are the
fabrics. Yes.
We're doing it with music. So I'm like, this is what it looks and sounds like. Here's my sounds. Here's this. Okay, let's structure it this way. And I'm kind of pulling in all these amazing brains that I like this person's sounds. And I like this person's drums. And I like this person's structure. And I'm piecing together this whole thing. And I'm going into making pretty, I think, very special records with a ton of different artists.
I'm sure it's going to be. I mean, if you feel it, and that's really like kind of the purpose and drive behind it all, right? We have a passion for things.
There's always like my whole life.
I think it's the only way you can make things successful. I think in an authentic way. I mean, it's not the only way people do their own thing. But I think for us, what makes it more special is that we do everything with heart and we want everyone to succeed that we love and care about and bring together.
And I want to create special moments, you know, create this, do really release a song and build an event around it, or build a, you know, kind of use all the things that make us and release them in our unique way, uplift the team around me, all the different things. But it was kind of always my dream to put music out. And now I have like the vision that I want to execute. And I felt like I got to a point in like my DJ career where I was like, I've kind of done the things I wanted to do. And to do the next things that I want to do.
Right.
I need to have the music out.
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, well, that's great that you see that, because some people do get stuck in one kind of thing or very comfortable, in which you can easily
do. We can never get comfortable.
We can never be comfortable. But I think that's the personality that comes with what I said was very special, that kind of brings this life and people together. And I'm very excited to see what music and all the other things that you come up with and we come up with.
Totally.
In the future, and see where Sunny Vodka goes. And
of course. Yeah, but that's the thing. It's like there's no rhyme or reason to how many things or what things you can do, especially when they're all synergetic.
Yes.
Right?
Exactly.
Like DJing a party is conducive to releasing music.
Yeah.
It's conducive to why wouldn't we have the vodka that's at the party that, you know what I'm totally. Saying? So all these things, it's not like they're random.
No.
It's not like it's, you know, so they're all correlated and whatever. And I think when we look back on our lives, we'll look back and be like, we did X, Y, and Z and all these different things, but we loved all of them.
Yeah.
And they all kind of have like a part common thread and they're all part of us. So I think that's the, like my life. And I know same for yours, is like, you look back on all these different chapters and you're like, maybe for 5 years I was doing this, and then for the next 5 years I did this, but it's just it's always constantly finding that next thing and that inspiration, and that's kind of the goal, right?
Yeah, and that's how we ended up at Marsha.
Totally.
Okay, this has never happened before on Marsha, but today we have a surprise guest, and it is none other than the legendary John Terzian.
Co-founder of the H-Wood Group, my manager, entertainment executive, just executive produced the Magic Johnson docs. We used up to school, you know.
H-Wood Media.
Yeah.
Proud father moment.
What? The rumor's true. You're Zach Bia's dad. You said no.
I've been denying it.
So we talked about Zach's career and his trajectory here at H-Wood and beyond.
Yep.
You tell us your feelings about Zach and when you met and what you see and what you see for the future.
So it's interesting. So I always, since I was a USC alum and I felt that nobody helped me ever, I was always like, hey, I'm going to give back, give anyone a chance that's able to reach me from USC Network, just overall, kid that's like overall kind of like myself. Because I felt that like I had a lot of great skills that no one cared about when I was younger, right? So, did you just tear up?
No.
I got you. So,
you guys.
I had met and had several, I guess you would call it interns or meetings even, or people that would work for us as promoters or DJs. And there were groups at a time, you know, over a few years. And you know, people would be good kids working, you know, all of the above. Zach, I got introduced from a mutual friend who actually was like a great event promoter, you know, kid for us. And briefly got to know Zach. And the few things that stuck out to me were he had a pretty similar background of me. He claims he was a quarterback in high school. I've never seen the arm.
It missed that part. We didn't go over that.
Yeah.
It's true.
Yeah. Grew up in LA, quarterback, USC. I don't know why. I could just tell he had a good vibe. Similar, different in a lot of ways. And that was it.
Yeah.
So got to know him. I don't think he realized that I was watching and testing out a bunch of different interactions that he has, because I ultimately just watch everyone and see how they are and see how they are with people, and just notice he was a real person and not affected by what was going on in and around him. This isn't required, but like, you know, I've never done a drug in my life. I've never, you know, I barely, you know, I drink now more, a lot more, but used to never drink.
Vodka became good.
And I did notice he... do you even drink? I don't even, now you do probably. But
now that you ship me off to a new city every week, I have to get comfortable.
I do ship him off. But basically he had that similar mindset. And so we grew, you know, know each other more and more. And so I just saw that in him. It was kind of more of a gut, and it was more than anyone. I'll never forget, the more we got to know each other, he hid the fact that he dropped out of USC for like a year for me.
Just didn't mention it.
And when you told me, I like flipped out.
He was so livid.
And I was like, you're not working for us if you don't graduate college. Like a father from like the 40s. Like, I don't I have no idea.
From the 40s.
And so, I mean, it was very odd, my behavior. Yeah. But I like felt that like he, you know.
You care.
He didn't want to pull me off track.
Yeah.
I mean, you should meet his mom, his brother, like the greatest humans.
No, and so I met his mom. His mom's amazing.
I actually felt like I was doing a disservice for him. Like I was like, cause you know, I never passed the bar from law school, and probably my biggest regret. So I never wanted him to look back and have a regret in life. So the only thing I can give back to like someone, a kid like that, he hid it from me. I think you lied to me several times about it, by the way.
I got class this afternoon.
You did. You lied about it several times.
I definitely was more nervous to tell you than anyone, for sure.
Oh, you didn't tell me. I found out.
Yeah.
So that was that. And then I will say I did give him a chance. I said, look, give it, this is what we'll deal on.
That's what you want.
It was like a 6 month. There was like one semester off.
I said, you give it 6 months and I see you're pulling some Zuckerberg stuff with us. Like, you know, if there's a reason why you've dropped out, then, I will agree, because I personally like, and you know, not to knock college, cause I'm college educated. I think college is a ton more for network relationships and social skills than I do for, like, I believe in like apprenticeships and trades. I really don't care what anyone's resume is to this day. I care about who they are as a person, what their drive is, you know, what their, you know, morals are, like just kind of all the above. And he had all that. I just didn't want him to ever have a regret.
Right.
And in those 6 months, what was really cool and what I saw is, you know, I was getting older. I was at the time having a baby, right? I was about to have Sky, and I was like, you know, you need to like really step up, be that person, like lead, be the face, be the handler, do every aspect of really what I do. And he exceeded, did better than me, which is all I want.
I just think that it was definitely a time where there had already been like 2 years of foundation and like trust, I think is the key word. Especially when we're going back to what we're talking about, dealing with key relationships and kind of, especially, you know, we talk about it like it's so normal, but a lot of people would come around these right situations and, you know, take pictures and do this and do that and get and go crazy partying or whatever it was, you know, a million things could happen.
No, and you're right. It's not normal.
And we had the trust built, and it got to a point where John was starting his family and doing these things. And he was kind of like, he definitely empowered me and gave me the keys and was like, you know, and made it known, like, Zach is essentially operating, like, as me, as, like, an extension of me.
The staff loved it.
You know.
It's like, wait, what?
And
like, the kid has carte blanche.
Yeah, they're like, he's carte blanche, kind of, like, do whatever. And this is, like, kind of, like, the beginning of, like, the next chapter.
That's major trust. Which was, I mean, like, you don't hand those keys out lightly, you know, honestly.
And that was kind of, like, the beginning of the next chapter. And I was able to operate kind of like with the new tools and new role. And it was the same thing always. It was the same thing. It was like,
with great power comes great responsibility.
No, we were having, it was fun.
But I think that's what built, you know, he saw rooms, he saw what I was doing. And then I think, you know, he naturally has the skill set with music. He's got that ear and that eye and started to play those rooms. And, I'm pretty sure I convinced him to turn into talent and have us manage him.
Mm. Well, I was like, remember I was like DJing like bars and I was like booking myself.
Yeah.
You're like, let me take over.
I was DJing like random bars.
So people would be like, Zach, I'll pay you $500 to come here.
I'd be like, $500. They'd be like, $150.
I'll do it for $150 free. And I'll pay you.
$150 and like,
yeah. So
we'll handle your parking.
Yeah. So basically, that's where I think that was a big flip for him to change his mindset to. And I still don't think he fully has, but that he's more of he's that creative in embracing that. And I think the more and more he's done that, he's flourished both as a business side of music and also the creative. So that's where the DJing and the music label goes hand in hand.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Well, how amazing. We got John Terzi in here. And what a glowing review.
I'll let you two go.
Oh, thanks.
Love you.
Love you, John. I think he's going to be stopping by a lot more, maybe because the offices are upstairs, but I welcome it. He has to be a co-host, so I'll give him a probation too.
Totally.
6 months. And that's it, everyone. Thank you so much. Like and subscribe for Marsha, Marsha, Marsha.
And I just want to say, congratulations to you for, you know, embarking on this.
Thank you so much. Well, thank you so much for being here. Honestly, it means so much to me to have close friends and family and get to know them more and closer. And, you know, we can only just grow from here. And as we support each other.
And you know, but like, seriously, when you take an idea from your head, which is like, I want to do a podcast or I want to go make this movie or whatever it is. Yeah. And then you actually embark on that journey and then it brings new challenges, new excitements, and you're in it. You're in the thick of it. It's rolling. You're 10 episodes in, 9 episodes in. It's like a whole new, you know, life. So
I'm excited. And thank you so much, Zach. Thank you for being here.
My pleasure.
Thank you, everyone, for watching and listening. And I love you.
This podcast is brought to you by Vocal Podcast Network. Executive producers are Michaela Simon and Marsha Molinari. Produced by Yonta Taiwo, Morgan McDonald, and Ariana Giles. Shooting and editing by Morgan McDonald. Music by Aaron Reese. Artwork by Dominic Demetz. And hosted by Marsha Molinari. Remember to follow at Marsha Molinari and at Vocal Podcasts everywhere. And don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to this podcast.